It's time for The Citizen Lobbyist, a discussion of local, borough, and state politics featuring Terry Snyder and Mike Malefsky.
Good morning, Citizen Lobbyist.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm watching it rain outside, which I guess we need because of the fire danger, but it'd be nice if the sun came back.
That is true. I see hints of a sky off there in the distance. So hopefully we'll be seeing the sun in a very short time. Very interesting week. We had a very brief, in terms of length of time, meeting at the City Hall where the Palmer City Council was meeting this week. And a good part of that was taken up with a committee of the whole as they began reflecting upon where the budget is at the present time and moving forward. But I thought we could start there with our discussion and then move on.
Sounds good, Mike. I wasn't able to attend that, so I'm curious to what the discussion was entailed.
Okay. Well, let me talk a little bit about that. I would want to begin with is saying that there was a proclamation that recognized Christy Bernier, who's well known in the city. She had a long career with local utility. She works for an organization called Brilliant Media Strategies. And the City of Palmer and the council extended their congratulations because they were nominated for two Northwest Regional Emmy Awards in June. And she was the editor, producer, creative director for a documentary, True North, the story of ASRC. And it won an Emmy for Best Documentary Historical Category for that piece.
Is that a first for Alaska?
Yeah, I cannot tell you that. I do not know. But in any case, this was impressive, and she was there, and it was recognized, of course, for that purpose. Also, there was a report by the Board of Economic Development, and they come every so often and explain where they are. And what they were talking about is the measured pace at which they were working. And, of course, there is a new economic development director. That is Brad Hansen, formerly a council member. And they were pretty happy with the way he was attending the meetings and providing a series of questions for them to talk about. Now, what I didn't pick up was specifics about the questions itself, but it sounded as if they feel that their role is understood and that they're going to be able to provide some recommendations to the council in the future. So it was good to hear that they were feeling good and that they had pretty much a plan for what they were going to do. Because from time to time, that body seems to have members come and go. And when they have new members, there's a burst of energy. And then sometimes there's a question about, well, just what are they doing? So that was there. And then the next thing that was of some interest was a report by the manager. And basically, he was talking two times. One is the manager's report, but also as a committee of the whole, the council was reflecting upon where the budget was at the present time. And the summary was basically that things are going pretty much steadily along where they expected. There's some interesting changes because of the change in the call center. When dispatch moved out of Palmer, the flow of money in and also the expenditures out changed the total amount of money that's involved in the budget. But at this point, it looks like the city has done pretty well and making its budget goals for 2018. And its whole purpose of doing the kind of open session of talking was to say, okay, we're looking ahead, we're preparing the 2019 budget. Is there anything in particular that the council, or for that matter, members of the public, want to bring it to our attention as we prepare that budget? So
was there any members of the public there to speak?
Well, yes and no. There were members of the public there, one at least. He was sitting next to me as I was streaming and videoing the meeting. But he did not speak at Persons to be Heard, and no one else stood up. So other than the presentation by the Board of Economic Development and Christy Brunet's appearance, it was pretty much a very light audience consisting primarily of staff members.
So was there any discussion, Mike, on thoughts from the Economic Development Director or anybody else about how to engage the community in budget talks and what the priorities are of the communities? How's that discussion?
I think that my takeaway from this was to say the invitation was obviously there to contact individual council members, to attend Board of Economic Development meetings. There wasn't really a strong, at least as I took away, a strong, for example, process being described for getting out and doing the kinds of things perhaps that had been done in the past. I know you've attended, I've attended events at the MTA Events Center where people would actually look and say, well, what kinds of things are most important to you? And I didn't come away with a sense that that was as strong a part of this whole process at the present time.
Well, that's kind of disappointing. I think that that's probably one of the biggest critiques I hear around here is that the public, although, you know, everybody always says you're welcome to go to assembly meetings, that, and we all know that that doesn't happen very often, that they aren't really using this day and age tools to perhaps reach out to the public to see what the priorities are. And, you know, there's some pretty simple surveying they could do, or, you know, public events get expensive, but then on the other hand, they own the depot, so it can't be too expensive to hold a public event just to hear from the public about what they think about roads, what they think about snow removal, what they think about, sales tax. I mean, it could go anywhere. Their water supply, there are all kinds of issues that they could weigh in on. And I always think that that's a good comment on a city when they're actually reaching their hands out to the community to hear a little bit more. And I think using the tools that are there by reaching out electronically, doing polling, I mean, they clearly probably have a pretty good mailing list of the people in Palmer, wouldn't seem like too heavy a burden to do if a city really wanted to hear from the occupants on what it was.
Well, I suspect that there will be some of that happening. I second your suggestion that be the case. And this, in some respects, is early on. It is July. They will be doing their budget process through to completion by the first part of December. In any case, it was an interesting, I think, first step of setting in place, it's the two parts I want to make sure people understand, a discussion about where things are with the present budget, and then a request, and now we'll see whether something of the sort you've described actually emerges from that. So the other report came from the mayor, and she's basically, and there was some discussion about the work with the Department of Transportation, the manager, the mayor referencing the likely beginnings that people are going to be able to see on the Glenn Highway project and also the Palmer-Wasilla Highway. But that it's going to not be, they underline that, they were been assured that it will not interfere with the Alaska State Fair traffic. The state has pretty much guaranteed that. And I'm looking out and thinking, yes, it's almost August, and I'm not seeing anything in, you know, very much after the Palmer-Wasilla work has been completed that is problematic. I mean, I know the buildings have been moved on the side and some other stuff has begun, but we're only 4 weeks away from the start of the fair, and there hasn't been very much obvious construction in place.
Right. Well, I think that the crux of what you're going to see that's really going to be a disruption to traffic flow, as I understand it, is going to come next summer.
Right.
You know, it's good they'll have plenty of time to repair. I do see some indications they're doing some traffic counting and that sort of thing, probably to talk about traffic flow. And they have a design, so that much is done. So it's just a matter of getting it done. And that's the big lift moving those buildings. That's been quite a feat to see some of those huge buildings moved off the side of the road. And so once they start the frontage road and that sort of thing, you will see significant impact to people that are commuting. I think you'll also see a significant impact to people finding a workaround, taking the Old Glenn Highway as opposed, you know, to going down the other way or going all the way up to Trunk and coming in that way. So people will find a way to do it. But it's going to be, I think the crux of it, you're going to see mostly going until next summer when you look out this late and nothing. They've made the way, but it's still a significant change that haven't really shown yet.
Right. Well, there's also mention, of course, of the event that's happening on Friday, the Palmer Community Pride that happens that Friday, July 27th. That's tomorrow. There'll be, as typically, free hot dogs, Alaska Grown Vegetables, City Awards. It begins at 4, goes to about 6. And, of course, Palmer Soromakai will be there with the ever-popular noodle shoot.
Oh, yeah. That is really fun.
And the city is sponsoring the city's night at the Matsu Miners. So one can roll from there over to the park and the baseball game, too.
Right. The Miners, it should be said that the Miners are in the playoffs, so there's going to be a lot of good baseball for people to take in.
Right.
The next
week or so. Right. So that was pretty much the meeting. I'd say there was one comment toward the end in the comments section where Councilmember Richard Best apologized for the possibility that his comments, which were intended as kind of a suggestion but a joke, tongue-in-cheek, at a previous meeting, might have been misconstrued as inappropriately requesting another council member through her employment with MEA to do something. Julie Esty had made a presentation, and Councilmember Best remarked that there had been pushback to him, saying what he said was inappropriate. But the listener apparently had understood it as being directed to one person rather than another. He wanted to clarify that that was not what he did, and Sabrina Combs, the council person, graciously said that was not, she didn't have a problem there and so on. So, but it was an interesting little comment at that point that suggested that some people are listening to what happens at the comments section.
That's good to say. That's good to know. Some of the best stuff comes out of comments. Mike, you and I both have seen that.
Right. Have you switched from phone to using your speaker there? You
sound I have.
That was a little distant. You became a little echoey. So, okay.
Oh, okay. I think that that's good that people are listening to the comments. You and I have both said for a long time that there's some of the best things we've heard come at the end of the meeting when everybody's gone. And members have time to sit there and contemplate things. So it's good that people are listening.
Well, I would like to segue onto another thing. I did go over yesterday to the Palmer Chamber. And the reason I went was because we had one of the first of the forums, not so much a debate, at the chamber. In this case, focused on two people involved with the Republican primary coming up here in August. And this was for one seat in particular, and that's the Alaska House seat for District 11. And of course, it involves Delana Johnson, who is the incumbent, and Mayor Edna DeVries, who is the challenger in that place. So it was an opportunity for people to listen to a discussion about a whole variety of questions associated, kicking off with the issue of Senate Bill 91, as it's been referred to, or the criminal justice changes that occurred, and then rolling on through things, as you might expect, such as the permanent fund dividend check, the actions taken by both the legislature and the governor in the past. It did show, I think, the people in the audience, the differences and similarities of view on the part of the two people running. I would say that at the present time, it seems to be clear that crime, and Mayor DeVries pointed out that her family's been victimized with theft, and so she's very much aware of it. And the real question is, and I didn't think it received a lot of attention in terms of specifics, as, okay, so if you repeal this bill that happened, what do you do next? And there was some, I thought, very light allusion to making changes. I didn't hear very much about how quickly will that happen, and will people find, if you take away these provisions that were implemented, that things will be really better? I was struck by what appeared to be a similarity of view that people have noticed a kind of increase in crime. They've noticed that there was this change in the criminal justice group of regulations and rules and laws and tied the two together. But going back is not really too possible. I don't know where you stand on that.
Well, you know, I think that there's hardly been a piece of legislation so misunderstood since it was passed in a long time. I think people are feeling the pain of a recession, of some wild spending by the legislature, so that now there was no money for the last couple of sessions to go into communities, a lack of funding in social problems, a social issue, or social health, recovery programs and that sort of thing, a burgeoning prison population with a revolving door, and then, you know, sort of the pinnacle was an opiate problem and that really took a lot of people down. And it was sort of the perfect storm for any type of a social crisis. And I think SB 91 was a really easy thing to blame. People have short memories and they forget that, you know, I know the Republicans were in the majority when it was passed and it was championed by a Fairbanks senator who isn't up for reelection this time, kind of jammed through in the session. And I think it's fair to say a lot of legislators didn't think it out really well when they passed it, and some of the problems that it should have probably been held over for another session to work out, but they were, it's always, we're always on an eve of another election, and I think some legislators thought it was a winning issue, and they it got pretty much jammed through. So there, even good-intended legislation has fallouts with it often, and the struggle to repair it was sort of epic, too, and Meanwhile, I think there is a lot of pain in communities, personally and community as a whole, for lack of funding, and as we shift from funding everything with state government back to the communities, who aren't really prepared for the transition. And we also, you know, are working in a climate where people think that they should not pay any more taxes for anything and have a pretty unrealistic idea of really what they pay taxes for, kind of an uninformed idea. And so it's just kind of a perfect storm, Mike. And I think there is a lot of talk about crime. I don't see a lot of specifics ever. And that's pretty common when there's pain, but not really a plan to do without that pain. But having said that, there's certainly been a lot of conversations about it. The Assembly will take it up in the next meeting, whether they put it on the ballot to have it go to the voters, whether there should be some type of a police protection. There is a crime discussion happening. Representative Johnson is holding, I see, I think from 1 to 3 or 1 to something at the Senior Center this coming Saturday. So it'll be interesting to see what is discussed there.
Part of this, and I think you've touched upon it, revolves around the money, because there was a further discussion at the chamber about funding for troopers, and whether there really was money to do it, will to do it, and all of the safety other programs that would work to help recidivism, et cetera. Played into the question of is there money somewhere hidden away or being wasted or in places that could be taken from and applied to some of these problems. And once again, I think I heard pretty much a soundbite type of thing without specifics. Mayor DeVries did suggest that the state has never really been audited to the same degree that the city, for example, or the school district is audited. And I'm not sure quite what that means. I think Representative Johnson somewhat disagreed, but didn't get into a head-to-head discussion about whether there was auditing or not. I think hanging out is the major question of, is there money available at the present time sufficient to do what we need to do with state government? Or do you have to face down the idea that if you're not getting money from our oil, then where does it come from? If you're not going to deal with the permanent fund in some way, then do you do sales or other taxes? And certainly, both of these candidates are standing and saying no to taxes. But I'm not hearing, and I'm hoping that at some point that will come out, is what are the specifics of where this money comes from that will be applied to the proper use of government?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that pretty much sums it up, Mike. I think it's a discussion we're going to continue to have, and there's not any one magic pill for it. I think it's going to take a series of fixes to make it happen. Everybody's got an opinion whether government's too big or too small, and what they haven't. I haven't heard any discussion on whether the system we have is even right. I mean, a lot of cities or a lot of states have a highway patrol system that's completely different than their trooper system. And all they do is take care of the highways, where the troopers actually have some time to go out and investigate what's going on. So what form should that take? I was recalling the other day that several years ago, when Governor Parnell was in, we used to have a fish and game troopers, so to speak, that did nothing but fish and game, and he melded the two together in so-called cost savings. Was that the right move? So I think there are some things they can put on the table to look at differently. We're certainly being asked to look at health differently, and looking the way we protect our citizens with local and state resources is a good discussion to have.
And talking about discussion, there was part of the discussion there at the chamber directed to the two people, the two candidates' opinion about caucuses and coalitions. And without a great deal of difference. In other words, if one or the other is elected, would they join the majority group that's a kind of coalition made up of two parties or not? And my impression is that's part of the question about how do you work with all of the other people that are in the legislature? If you have a House that's of one party or mindset and the Senate of a different, the real measure is, can you work out your differences and come up with good solutions? Or do you sit there looking across silently at the table or throwing barbs at one another? And I think both at a national level and the state level, people have expressed the opinion that you need to be locked into the room until you come up with a good solution, and then we'll let you out. In the meantime, we'll put food in, but you don't get paid if you pass the maximum number of days. Things like that. They're saying, come on, do this. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm glad that you attended. Just shortly, what was the answer about caucuses? Do they both intend to remain in their...
Well, I think their answers were interesting. They both basically said that they would look at the way in which that was made up, the coalition in the House in particular, and depending upon what they were being asked to do, they would stay in. But they both alluded to their willingness to not be part of it if it went against their basic values and principles. So you weren't getting I wasn't getting a heavy duty approval of it and their being willing to join.
So interesting.
Well, we have about a minute or two left. What any last comments before we finish up today?
Nope, I think that wraps up, Mike. It's going to be kind of a slow slog. We will be able to talk next week about who threw their hat into the ring officially for the October borough and city elections, because that's coming up at 4 o'clock for the city, at least, on Friday. I've seen some petitions, and so we'll see.
And there are, by the way, the Palmer City Clerk did announce that there were three that have been turned in and approved, and they were the three incumbents, Linda Combs, Pete LaFrance, and Richard Best. So
great.
We'll see if anybody else does. Well, thank you, Citizen Lobbyist, for calling in today. Have a good day.
Good day. Bye.
You've been listening to The Citizen Lobbyist, broadcast on Thursdays at 8 a.m. and repeated at 5 p.m. on Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska. You can find the podcast at radiofreepalmer.org. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.